You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. It's the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jays.
Hey there, welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast, and we are joining you from the depths of the Boston Garden as they tear it down behind us. Good, tear it down after the Celtics lost to the Los Angeles Lakers. 129-128 on, of all things, a Rajon Rondo buzzer beater, which kind of felt appropriate, actually, the way this day went. We're the Raining Jays. I am John Corrales of MassLive.com, joined by Samuel Jamison Packard III.
Jam.
Also known as Ladies Love Cool Jam.
Jam!
Like the bipolar thing you're going
on. Yeah, well, I was initially sad about the result of the game, but I realized it's just 1 of 82 and needed to bounce back.
That's it. Get the people something to be happy about. So the Lakers, I just never thought they were going to win this game, and there they did. They stole it at the end. So you get the final play. It looked like the Celtics got a stop.
They blocked. Al Horford, I'm pretty sure, blocked Brandon Ingram, and that's not who you wanted. The Lakers wanted the ball to go to with, 6 seconds left?
No.
They got to stop it, but just boom, Rajon Rondo,
around,
20 feet.
There it is. Rondo just gets the ball. It's one of those weird things, but Brad Stevens said after the game that the basketball gods rewarded the right team. And I think the reason why is because they just didn't look good for most of the night, and they looked terrible defensively. And the reason why I said it was appropriate for Rondo to hit that game winner was two things. First, KG was in the house, and he was wearing an old-school Celtics Rondo jersey. So that, I think, KG was probably hoping for the Celtics to win. But
it's tough to work against that mojo.
That's when KG's in the house. First of all, when KG's in the house, it's just
it's cool.
That's crazy. But for that to be wearing the old school Rondo jersey, I mean, that's just kind of funny. So you kind of had that thing going on. But secondly, the Celtics just gave up a ton of second chance points. And I don't have that statistic.
18 second chance points.
There it is.
50 points in the paint, and they gave up 22 three pointers. So that's 66. That's basically all of the Lakers' points right there. Either came from threes, 66 points, or points in the paint, 50. And so in the first half, when the Lakers weren't knocking down as many threes, it was basically a layup factory. I mean, the Celtics were doing a good job. Neither team played great defense tonight.
But then
you see in the third quarter, the Lakers hit, what, it felt like 8 threes in a row, and it's just they scored 45 points in that quarter. And part of it was Celtics' bad defense, but part of it was just the Lakers just knocking down ridiculous shots.
But this is how it goes. Early on, they were giving up everything in the paint. And Tatum, after the game, said that it was miscommunications and guys weren't really playing as hard as they should. And I think the team just kind of, back to Brad Stevens' point, that the basketball gods rewarded the right team. It's because one team played hard and the other team just kind of played like, it's the Lakers. They're coming in off a 42-point loss. And, you know, we got them. And early on in the game, they gave up all of those points in the paint. Like, that first quarter was nothing but layup after layup after layup for the Lakers. And on times where they got offensive rebounds and should have put it back, the Celtics were able to force some turnovers, or the Lakers just missed. Like, this might not have even needed a Rondo buzzer beater if they were a better team and hit as often as they should have when they got some of those opportunities earlier. So I think what happens is you give a team that many opportunities to see the ball go in and get easy shots. Yeah, they started off cold from three, but that's getting those easy shots is a very easy way to keep your confidence high. And then you start hitting those shots, and then forget it. That's when the cascade happens. So them getting hot from three was not surprising at all, because they just gotten so many opportunities at the rim to see the ball go in and score easily and stay close when the Celtics had put together runs that should have put them away. Celtics scored 36 points in the second quarter. That should have been it. That should have been it right there. But they gave up 33 to the Lakers, and the Lakers stayed in it. And then next thing you know, they come out and drop a 42-point third quarter on a million threes in a row. And that I think, was everything that led up to those threes falling is why those threes started falling.
And even with that horrendous third quarter, I think the bench really played well and kind of got the Celtics back into the game. And I was actually surprised to see Brad go back to the starters after it felt like Tice, hot slice of Tice was fantastic tonight. He's basically the only reason they scored or were still in the game in the third quarter. I think he scored 11 points in the third quarter. And I thought Jaylen Brown had a really good game. Terry Rozier had a very good game, especially a lot of points to start the fourth quarter. I thought Tatum played well with that group. But Brad Stevens went back with the starters there, Kyrie, Horford. And the Celtics were up six with a minute and a half to go.
Yeah.
But then it comes down. KCP hits a kind of what was a very awkward three in the corner. It looked like he hesitated a bit, knocked it down. Kyrie comes down, throws a bad pass. Then there was a real wacky play where LeBron looked like he was falling out of bounds, threw it behind his back, like a behind-the-back bounce pass that just kind of bounced to no one. And LeBron, having the presence of mind to just like immediately got to the corner, knocked down a three. I mean, it's just they had a chance, but then they just like these kind of these fluke play. I don't even want to like call them fluke plays, because there was bad, like in terms of 50-50 balls, it felt like the Lakers got them the entire night.
Yeah.
And so if you're not playing your hardest, if you're not kind of hustling and not like playing great defense, you're not going to win the 50-50 balls, and the fluke plays are going to go the way of the other team. And so those two big threes happened. And then I think the biggest shot of the game was Kyle Kuzma's three to put them up one. That was just great offense from the Lakers, and the Celtics couldn't play defense for a full possession. That was a wide-open shot for Kyle Kuzma, who hit, what, five threes tonight? He's clearly a decent three-point shooter. I mean, I'm not going to say he's better than Jason Tatum, or some might say, but clearly he's skilled from deep, and if you give him a wide-open shot, that's what forces the Celtics to be 18 seconds left to not really hold for the last shot, because when you're down one, you don't want to just hold for the last shot. You want to like create some opportunities in case you miss, and that gives the Lakers an opportunity after Kyrie makes it to come back and win this game.
It just boils down to, like you said, the 50-50 balls, the hustle, hard work, and if you're not going to put in that hard work, you kind of deserve what you get. And the fact that they let the Lakers come back from once they went up six, I said, okay, this is probably over. And the Celtics said that too, clearly, because they just kind of stopped playing. And when you do that, crazy things happen, because Kuzma is still a talented guy. I don't know if he's 5 of 8 from three talented, but there it is. LeBron, 5 of 10 from three. Rondo, 3 of 4 from three.
That was the wildest part.
Yeah. Or KCP, 5 of 9 from three. Lance Stephenson, 3 of 5 from
that
three.
That might have been the wildest part.
You know, there's a lot of crazy numbers here. 22 of 41. They shot 53.7% from three, the Lakers did. That's a stupid number. I mean, that's just a stupid number. And you could look at this and easily say, well, you could play them 100 times and they'll never shoot. This might be the only time they shoot 54% from three. But like I said, you let them get too many shots at the rim, and then you stop playing defense.
Then you're a step slow when you're trying to contest on threes, and then they start feeling it.
They start feeling it, and then that's it. And then at the end, you do enough to block the shot, and then it just gets too frantic, you're overreacting or whatever it is. You're just not in the right position to make the final play. And I think if there's any kind of nutshell here, it's that in that play, it's that they just weren't in position, and they got burned by a ridiculous shot.
They were in position. They got the initial block. I think it's just more of a fluke of, I guess, for the offensive rebound. I haven't actually gone back and watched the replay, so I don't know if someone who's like wildly helping out on
try and figure it out. But things happen. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. The Celtics locker room after the game, No, they were downright joyful. And I was like, I was completely fine with it because it's one game. Control we can control. They're going to watch the film. I imagine they're going to come out with a better effort against the Clippers. But it was actually a much cheerier locker room after today's game. And maybe it's got to do with the trade deadline than it has been after like a lot of the recent wins.
Yeah, we'll talk about that trade deadline in a few minutes. We're going to take a break and talk about what we're looking at here with the Celtics with regard to some of the other guys like Kyrie Irving and other players here, key players in this game. We're going to take a break. We're going to come right back here on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
Let the bass kick.
Kyrie Irving led the Celtics with 24 points, surprisingly, because he was super, super cold tonight. Shot 6 of 21, and he came back. I mean, he's Kyrie, so no matter how cold he was in the fourth quarter when they needed him, he was going to step in and do what he needed to do. He scored, I think he was 3 of 3 in the fourth quarter. And he scored most of his points in the second half. He scored 16 of his 24 points in the second half. And that's what you expect your star player to do. But he was just cold, and he was off. And he said after the game that they threw length at him, and Brandon Ingram was guarding him. And he was like, I got to admit, like that was a little different for me, and it kind of threw me off a little bit. So he was bothered by the Lakers' length. The one downside to that and him kind of saying that is, all right, well, now another team knows, like, well, if we have length, let's try to see if we can throw a longer guy at Kyrie and see if that can throw him off. Because if you can throw Kyrie off, then, I mean, obviously the Celtics are deep and they got, like you said, great production off the bench. I mean, they really scored a ton off the bench. But on nights where you can keep Kyrie to 6 of 21 shooting, you have a good chance to win.
Yeah, he was not great tonight, especially early. It felt like his shot was blocked more often than I've ever actually seen it. And clearly that has to do with the length. But then there was also just like some floaters in the lane that you're used to seeing him hit, some mid-range shots you're used to seeing him hit. There was this one putback where it was pretty much point blank and he didn't hit it. He clearly was quite good down the stretch there, and I think he made up like most of it by getting to the line. He was 10 of 10 from the free throw line. The Celtics actually are perfect 20 for 20, and that's really the only reason that they were basically still in this game. The Lakers had more field goals, more threes, shot a better percentage, but they were only 7 of 8. They were 7 of 18 from the free throw line, and the Celtics 20 of 20. A lot of the statistics are pretty much even in terms of rebounds, assists, turnovers. But I thought Kyrie Irving, I was surprised to see him. He definitely felt like he was trying to shoot himself out of a slump, but he still was able to come down and knock down a huge FU three to counter LeBron in the fourth quarter, and then he was huge down the stretch. He had the big layup. He had basically two go-ahead layups. He still was quite good, but early on, you're just not used to seeing him struggle like that. No. But he was very lucky that, and the Celtics are quite lucky that they have other guys. I mean, I thought Jalen was fantastic tonight, 7 of 10 from the field, just playing good basketball, homicidal dunks left and right.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Tatum was great, especially on the boards, but also I thought Tatum did a damn good job passing the ball. Knowing the right time when to, like, when he found Rondo on him, knowing when to attack, going right through Ingram. And then Terry Rozier, I'll mention it again, he finished with 19 points, 5 of 7 from deep. He was fantastic there to start the third quarter. I mean, to start the fourth quarter. But I got to get back to my mainest man, the German, Tice. 2 of 2 from deep.
Yep.
9 of 11 from the field.
Dunks
3 offensive rebounds. Was cleaning up the glass. 20 points. He was just fantastic. They really didn't know how to deal with him. He basically put Tyson Chandler off the floor because they just couldn't deal with his him stretching the floor. I thought he was amazing tonight. I mean, if Rondo doesn't make that shot, Tice is the story of the night. And I feel like it was funny after the game, Kyrie Irving got asked about Daniel Tice, and that's where he brought up the length of Brandon Ingram really bothering him. He just kind of was like, yeah, I thought Tice was good for tonight, and then just went into talking about his own stuff.
About something else.
But, yeah, I mean, Mook did not have a great game. He did have had that big three, but he was 1 for 5. I didn't. Marcus Smart missed a lot. Was 2 for 9 from three. So,
yeah. I know it's like the day after I tried to convince Jay King that, or a couple days after I tried to convince Jay King, like Marcus Smart shooting is for real. Like, just let's just get to that. It's for real. He shoots 2 of 9 from three.
He misses a giant three and gets a rebound and then misses another wide open three.
Yeah. It was not his best shooting night, but that's, I don't know, I'm just going to chalk that up to more aberration right now because it has been an aberration this season. So Daniel Tice is the second time he's scored 20 points in his career. His career high is 22. So Jason Tatum finished with 22. It's the 19th time this season he scored at least 20 points, and it's the second straight game. His 19 games of 20-plus points are third most by a Celtics player under 21 in a single season. And he had 22 and 10. You mentioned his rebounding. It's his third double-double with 20 or more points this season. So, and Terry Rozier's 5 3-point field goals match his season high. So there's some notable things from the Celtics PR staff there. I don't know. This is just one of those...
It's just one of those bullshit losses.
The
NBA season, I feel like there's 10 bullshit losses and 10 bullshit wins, and then the rest is like kind of what the team actually is. But sometimes you come out on top of them, and some, like, Rondo could have easily missed that shot. The ball could have bounced out of bounds after the block. There's a lot of different things, but I mean, the Celtics clearly have to do a better job on the defensive end and kind of refocus. I think that it's going to be... They really can't overlook the Clippers before going to play Philadelphia next week and before the All-Star break. But I think the All-Star break will be good for everyone just to kind of rest a little bit, get the week off, refocus, get some energy back, and kind of like go down the stretch run where now it's a ball game in the East because everyone's making moves.
Yes, and we're going to talk about that. I like the way you set up that segue. We're going to talk about that after the break. Trade deadline has come and gone. The East has gotten better. And the Celtics, well, they won too, in a way. We'll talk about it after the break here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Anthony Davis, still a Pelican, which means the Boston Celtics are now in the mix. They can make their offer, and they can be in play for the services of Mr. Anthony Davis. Now the question becomes, can these guys stay together and get through the rest of the season without thinking about, is this my last time as a Celtic? And in the locker room, they did seem to be relieved to know that they're going through the rest of the season. This is going to be their squad.
Yeah, no, we mentioned the jovial locker room, and there's all these questions about the teams because every other challenger in the East made a move to improve their team for this season. Every other team is going for it. We talked about Tobias Harris last night. The Bucks today added Mirotić. And the Toronto Raptors added Marc Gasol. So it's clearly going to be a battle in the East, but I think if you look at the day, the Celtics won because they're still in the Anthony Davis sweepstakes, and they're able to open up a roster spot for
that's right.
Basically paying the Hawks to waive Jabari Bird for them, bribing them.
Yeah.
And so now it enters the illustrious... Illustrious is not the word I was going to look for. The mysterious buyout market, where who knows what players could be available.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see who
there's a lot of talk about they're not actually going to use this player because they just want to sign someone to a two-year deal to use the mid-level exception so they can match salaries with Anthony Davis trade next year. That's all the nuance there, but I think it like they could add a player, but really I don't know where they're going to get the minutes. I mean, we saw them play 9 guys tonight, and that's with Baines on the bench. So you imagine if a fully healthy team, that do they have a role for like a legitimate guy?
So there are a lot of different theories going on out there. I mean, do you get a useful player, and there will be useful players available? Do you get one of those guys and see if he can help and pay him your taxpayer mid-level somewhere around $5.3 million? And you structure the deal so it can match salaries and it's non-guaranteed, so he's waivable. Or do you find a guy who is going to be happy to not get the minutes? You sign him and you say, okay, Sam Packard, we want to sign you.
Yeah.
Sit at the end of the bench and you're going to get paid, you know, the prorated $5.3 million.
I am available. You don't have to wait till the buyout market. Yeah. I would sign today.
I think if they're going to do a situation like that, they should.
But I don't know. I don't know if the Pelicans would want me in sort of Anthony Davis. Ever since what happened in 93 in New Orleans, my reputation in that town.
But if they get somebody that's just kind of okay with end of the bench minutes, you get like a two-way type of guy and you pay him that money, and you have them sit at the end of the bench. I don't know if that's the way to go. I think that would get some resentment. But at the same time, they got to figure out the best course of action for the team. That's a possible thing to do. You get a guy, he comes in. What I'm saying is they shouldn't go get like Enes Kanter.
No.
Because he's going to want to play. And if they get him to just sit him, oh, God, forget it. It's not even worth having him around.
I like if they are going to get a player who they like expect to play, ideally I think it would be someone who serves as some sort of Baines insurance, because clearly I mean we talk about Tice having a great game tonight, but there was points where he just got beat up on the inside. Mm-hmm. And he's not the size. I like the idea of Robin Lopez, admittedly very selfish. I just want to talk Simpsons with him,
sure,
but it's like someone like who is that big, who is competent, who can like say Baines is hurt. He has an injured foot. It's not broken, but it's bruised. But feet could be injuries that linger. Maybe that's somewhere where you look. Maybe like the only other name that comes to mind, because Robin Lopez has been rumored to be going to the Warriors for about 3 months now, is Gortat. But I don't want that old carcass on the Celtics. So really, I don't know what like who's really out there. But if you're looking for a position, I think it would just be like a large boy.
Yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that. So we'll have to see what the Celtics do moving forward with the buyout stuff. But let's look at the rest of
the Eastern Conference. Does the Marc Gasol scare you as a member of the Toronto Raptors?
Scare me? No.
The thing that's confusing to me is that they traded him for basically Jonas Valanciunas, but Jonas Valanciunas isn't a starter. Like, I think the Raptors' best lineup is Siakam at the 4, Ibaka at the 5. Who are you taking out to put Gasol in crunch time? Are you taking Siakam out of the game? Are you taking Danny Green out of the game? Are you taking Ibaka out of the game? Because I feel like Ibaka's been great for them. I asked this on Twitter, and the consensus on Twitter was like, oh, you don't play Ibaka. But I don't know. Marc Gasol, he's no longer like the defensive player of the year candidate.
Right.
He's not looked as good this year. I don't know. I don't know if this really turns the needle for them, and they lose like DeLon. I thought DeLon Wright was like a decent player, just a little bit less depth. It felt like the Sixers and the Raptors just have a little bit less depth now than they did. Well, the Sixers did a good job of kind of making some other ancillary trades to add to it, getting rid of Markelle Fultz, getting Jonathan Simons, trading for James Ennis, but nothing that I think is like now they're demonstrably better.
Right. So I would say, as far as Gasol goes, there's a few things going on here. I think they made a move. They consolidate the bench a little bit. The bench last season was great. This season is okay, but I think making sure that they've got shorten the bench a little bit to kind of make sure that the minutes are going to the right people. I think there's value in that. They send a message to Kawhi Leonard, look, we are in this. We are going to do what we need to do to build a winner here. So we want you to stick around. And then when it comes to Gasol, I mean, he is an upgrade over Valanciunas. You can run pick and roll, pick and pop with him much more effectively. And I think that will unlock a little bit more of what Kyle Lowry can do. Kyle Lowry is an all-star this year. His advanced numbers are great, but I think sometimes he's been a little too passive. And I think playing him off of Gasol is just going to help Kyle Lowry a little bit. Another thing, I wish I could remember who had this stat, but the Raptors are like have been last or near the bottom in like elbow assists. Assists from the high post there, and that's a Marc Gasol specialty.
And he leads the league in like touches at the high post.
Yeah. So, and that kind of goes along with the pick and rolls with Kyle Lowry. You know, you run that pick and roll or pick and pop, and he pops to that area. Or even if you just set him up in that area, there's a lot that he can do in that. And you can run your offense through Gasol in that post, the high post, and it's going to be very effective. So it's just another option. So it. Scare is not necessarily the right term, but it's going to make beating them a whole lot more difficult. There is ways to attack it, and Al Horford's going to be very important in the series with them, especially more important now. There are ways to scheme that, but it's just going to make it a lot more difficult.
Now, the one team we have not talked about yet is the Milwaukee Bucks, who basically turned Thon Maker into Nikola Mirotic. That was just a solid move.
Yeah.
Nikola Mirotic is a damn good shooter. He knocks down threes. You put him around Giannis. It absolutely makes the Bucks better. Yep. I still think the Celtics have a chance against them just because they have a very good defense and kind of, I feel like, have a good blueprint about kind of how to play Giannis, especially with Horford and the different guys. But they just have a much better surrounding cast with Brook Lopez and Mirotic surrounding Giannis. So I think the Bucks are clearly the best team in the East right now and are probably the favorite moving forward. And kudos to them, because that was just a very, very solid general managing.
Yep, it was a very shrewd move. Excellent asset management, because they got rid of Thon Maker, who was unhappy. So you get rid of a guy who's a malcontent, who was not even in the rotation, really. You give up you give up another player, forget who it was, and then a couple of second round picks. So you don't give up a first. You get the Detroit Pistons involved. They send a couple of second rounders. They get rid of Stanley Johnson. The Pelicans get 4 second round picks, which they can use. Those can be useful. Get a couple of young guys they can take a look at. They're kind of happy. They accomplish what they want to accomplish, but the Bucks turn essentially a non-rotation guy and a couple of second rounders into Nikola Mirotic. And even if, like, my first reaction was, well, the Celtics have targeted him on switches and they've attacked him when they played the Pelicans. But if for some reason they do match up and they do attack that matchup and Mirotic is just a net negative on the floor, you just pull him. And now you send out the lineup that's been the number one seed in the East. It's as low risk a move as you can get. It's like a low risk, high reward move for them, and it's really just an excellent move by the Bucks.
Yeah, I don't think Mirotic will ultimately be the huge difference maker because he is such a kind of a minus on the defensive end of the floor. But you know, kudos to the Bucks for going out and doing it while they're the number one team in the East.
If you can find a way to help him out defensively, and he can go out there and spread the floor, knock down 2 or 3 threes. We've seen him get hot.
He can knock down 5 or 6 threes. He can pull a Kyle Kuzma
real fast. Yeah. and he becomes a threat out there. It's another threat. And you give Giannis that little bit more space. I mean, you sag off Giannis and try to turn him into a jump shooter, but you still give him
Giannis
a little bit more space.
He can still get to the rim basically anytime he wants.
He just takes 2 steps and he's by. He's like through double teams. It's wild. So that's just going to make life a little bit tough. And then there's Philly, who
Yo,
got
fuck
Tobias
Joe Swift.
Harris. People walking by. What's up, Joe Sway? People walking by on their way out just making faces at us.
No, he gave me the finger, so I had, you, ooh, I had to say
he
some
made
salty
an
things.
Obscene gesture?
Yeah. How I don't mean that. I'm a big Joe Sway fan. But yeah, the 76ers, they added Tobias Harris. We talked about that. But then they added James Ennis. They just added like some semblance of a bench by not really giving up anything except for Markelle Fultz. And thank God for Markelle. He needed a change of scenery.
Now I want to see him do well.
Yeah. Perfect place to do well. Like a bunch of lanky dudes you can throw lobs to. Well, we feel like just sell out on defense because you have Mo Bamba, Jonathan Isaac back there.
I hope that he can get back to some of the form that made him the number one overall pick, because you just watch him playing in Washington and that was, it was so good. He was so good. And if nothing else, it'd be fun to see him go somewhere else. Just so people can be like, so what's wrong with that Philly medical staff anyway? You know, just to have people have those questions in their heads. You know, what's going on with that? So Philly's going to be another one. And this is a move that makes their starting five very, very difficult. People are calling it the second best starting five in the NBA at this point, which it's hard to argue. But obviously, they still all of these moves make teams better. But every team still has its deficiencies, and there's still a question of can you sag off of Simmons and turn him into a shooter? And
no, he won't shoot.
You target JJ Redick defensively and see if you can force switches and just attack that. And the Celtics with Al Horford pulling Embiid away from the hoop. I mean, there is a formula there still for the Celtics. Tobias Harris makes it harder. But their bench does get thinner. They have added some decent pieces to their bench, but they're not great pieces, and it's not as bad as it was initially, but and good for them for doing it, but there are still questions. And the best case scenario is that they do very well and all those guys want to come back, and then they have a very, very expensive team. A very expensive team that better win the NBA Finals. Because you got a super expensive team.
Especially if Ben Simmons gets an All-NBA or qualifies for the Supermax.
Yep.
They're like immediately, I think it's like 100 and...
They're over the tax.
Like it was like $130 million between four players.
Yeah, they're over. They're not just over the cap, they're over the tax with those four guys. If they do what they say they're going to do and sign all of them, which I don't think is going to happen, but if they do what they say they're going to do, then... That's going to be a super expensive team, because then everybody they sign after those four guys, like you got to sign JJ Redick at that point to a deal, and he has him over a barrel. You pay him $15 million a year. Well, that's not $15 million. It becomes whatever level of taxation that ends up being like a $30 million contract. And then you start signing guys for, you know, minimum deals. It just adds up. It adds up. And if they don't... The worst case scenario is Tobias Harris says, yeah, thanks, but no thanks.
I want to be a star of my own team.
You know?
Jimmy Butler says, I don't like these guys. They're too sensitive.
Yeah. I'm going to go to Brooklyn. I want, you know, Tobias Harris goes to wherever. And now you got nothing. Because now all of your assets, all your tradable stuff, you've already traded. And you still have Embiid and Simmons, which makes you maybe a 4-5 seed with whomever you can throw around them. But that's not what this whole process has been about. So everybody's gotten better, but everybody's got flaws. There's no perfect team except for the Golden State Warriors.
That was poetic.
Thank you. And that's how we're going to end the show. Oh, wait, no. We've got a junk drawer.
We got a junk drawer. I'm going to say skip the tweets.
Skip the tweets, because it's late. And I still got a lot of stuff to do, man. Yeah, I'm going to get up to like 4 in the morning.
All right. There's a mystery man who's been around Kyrie Irving. I've seen him a lot this season. I think he's just today he was wearing a leather jacket, a leather hat with a Kyrie logo on it, some camo pants, and looked like some nice Italian boots. And I finally figured out who it was. It's Kyrie's personal trainer. His name is Robin Pound, and he's a badass. And I just thought the people needed to know that. I watched the All-Star Draft, and it was mildly entertaining.
The best part is, in my opinion, the best part, people are going to say, LeBron picked Anthony Davis and Giannis made a tampering joke. It was pretty funny. But I enjoyed Ernie Johnson going back and forth. Was like, it's your turn, LeBron. It's your turn, Giannis. But at some point, he just said, go ahead, freak. Just referring to Giannis Antetokounmpo. I just like calling him freak casually. It's just good fun. And then another part of the draft is that Giannis picked Ben Simmons, who's a clutch sports guy, just to trade him back for Russell Westbrook to fulfill his promise of putting Russell Westbrook and Joel Embiid on the same All-Star team.
Why didn't he just pick Westbrook? Because LeBron picked him earlier?
No, I don't even know why it happened.
He just made a trade.
I think I'm giving Giannis too much credit for being conniving right now, but he did pick Ben Simmons. But I thought that was I just like the idea of Embiid and Westbrook having to hang out in the same locker room because they really don't like each other.
They really don't. They really, really don't. That's fantastic.
Lil Funk was here, which is always fun, but then they started flossing, and people know that I'm not a fan of the flossing dancing. So it was
I'm glad I missed that.
I saw it a little bit, but then the fine folks out there tweeted it at me. Ingram was at the line. We got some horrible chanting. Half the crowd was screaming overrated. Half the crowd was screaming LeBron's going to trade you.
Yeah.
I feel like the other half was screaming LeBron should have traded you. It was really it was a hot mess. I appreciate trying to be mean, but the execution was not great.
We can all appreciate trying to be mean.
JetBlue Flight Crew was back.
Yes.
This is
my most anticipated part of the podcast.
After a brief hiatus, it feels like they added 4 or 5 new members to the crew. They toned down the level of difficulty tonight, but they were solid.
Solid.
Only one missed dunk. They did a lot of just solid tricks. A lot of just basically the same trick over and over again, just ran 12 dudes through it. But because of the degree of difficulty, like, the max they could have done would have been like an 8. And I think they did it. They came in at like a 6.8.
As Brad Stevens says, you just got to hit singles.
And that's what they did. They realized they didn't have their star player. They realized they couldn't do the same thing. And they went back, added some more people, and just said, you know what? We're just going to make dunks. People want dunks. You got to graduate to the higher level. So kudos to the JetBlue flight crew.
Ooh, kudos to the flight crew.
Mookie Betts was here tonight, along with a number of Patriots who no one recognized because they all wear helmets. And other than like Kyle Van Noy and the McCourty twins, you have no idea who they are.
Like they ran that video like, yeah, Patriots are here. And there's like the McCourty twins are up there and like, yeah. And they start showing like some, I don't know. I don't follow it close enough.
I only knew Rex Burkhead because he was a white guy.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, I guess you're a football player. And then they showed Belichick. It was like, yeah. It was really funny. There were like a couple of guys. I'm like, show somebody that we know quickly.
Or throw a lower third on there and say their name.
Right. You know what? I'm going to say, I hated the way that was executed. Like, I'm glad all these Patriots were here, but when the Red Sox were here, they had
a trophy presentation.
They brought the trophy out. Everybody touched the trophy. Like, that was cool. Like, why not come out? You have 6 Super Bowl. Come out with 6 trophies and march out to center court and like, oh, look at the Patriots. Like, that would have been so cool. And think about the Celtics on the bench looking at all of those Super Bowl trophies.
And how crazy the fans are going and like what it means to win championships. Beat LA is
to blame for that, but somebody dropped the ball. At least one Super Bowl trophy. At least this one. What happened there?
I don't know. It was confusing. Mookie Betts was here. He looked like Darkwing Duck wearing a silly top hat.
I didn't see that.
It was real brief. Again, they didn't really draw attention to it. They just kind of showed him for a brief moment. Some people cheered. Some people didn't. And then there's this one play. I'm going to have to admit it. Tonight, I cheered in the press box. There's a play where they trapped LeBron James. There's a loose ball. Tice was going on the floor. It almost goes out of bounds. Tatum saved it. And then it was a Jaylen Brown behind the back twice, once just to dribble, once to find Terry Rozier in the corner. But I found myself arms going up, extending, going, yeah, when Tatum saved it. And then I was like, oh crap, you're supposed to be a respectable journalist up here. So hand up, I cheered in the press box. I know it's not what you're supposed to do, but I did it.
That's hilarious.
That's pretty much it.
That's it. All right, well. Then that's it. That's the end of the podcast then.
we'll just wrap it up there and say thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for subscribing. Shout out to all the new listeners. Hope you are enjoying the show. Welcome aboard. We're here for you Monday through Friday, so that deserves a 5-star rating, deserves a good review, and deserves you sharing the podcast and telling everybody, listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King.